Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytane and Tsintsiyan First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. Now, today we're talking about healthcare leadership and its relationship to quality improvement. Leadership is an often neglected part of the medical school and residency curriculum, leading many qualified physicians, once in practice, to feel under-equipped and lacking in confidence in their early leadership roles. But it turns out there is an overlap between the skills physicians learn through quality improvement and those required for leadership, and that experience in one can enhance capability in the other. And to talk about her experience with quality improvement and how it's impacted her subsequent physician leadership roles is our guest today, Dr. Gurpreet Narang, a radiologist at the University Hospital of Northern British Columbia. Hello, Gurpreet. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello, Dr. Chewy. Hello, Lee. Thank you for having me on today.
So before we get into the topic of QI and leadership, I wonder whether you can give us a little background about yourself. Where did you grow up, for example, and what did your career journey look like up to the point of your current role?
Thank you for that. So I grew up in New Delhi and completed my medical training in India. After that, I moved to the UK to train in internal medicine and radiology. And then we moved to Canada in 2011. We lived around Vancouver, so the lower mainland, for a couple of years before heading to the north, Prince George, where we have lived since 2013. This has given me a unique opportunity to see up close working of three different types of healthcare working environments amongst multitude others, but also to understand and to learn from the nuances from each of them, the weakness and the strengths of each of them, and the unique challenges that different ways of healthcare delivery can have. It has helped to make me more adaptable, as well to the challenges posed by the challenges as well as the resources available in different kinds of healthcare working environments.
And so talking about challenges, how did you first develop an interest in quality improvement, something which is actually surprisingly difficult, I think. And where has quality improvement taken you since that interest?
Yeah, my introduction to quality improvement was in my clinical training with the frequent use of audits in England. It is a part of training, medical training. And whilst audit is a different process from quality improvement in some ways, that it is retrospective, it is time-bound, it actually measures the current practice against a standard of practice or guideline, and helps to identify a problem that we can work upon. In some ways, it is still very similar to quality improvement, that the overall goal is towards improvement of healthcare delivery to a patient. And so fast forward to 2021, when I was working as a radiologist in Prince George, I got involved in a quality improvement project that we were working on in the diagnostic imaging department, where a patient survey from patients who were waiting as outpatients, who were waiting to have their CT examination being performed, that survey yielded a result that showed that our waiting times were quite long. And so the quality improvement project was aimed at trying to reduce the waiting time for our outpatients who were waiting to have the CT examination done. And that led me into a formal learning environment where this project was part of a cohort of VALS, so the Virtual Action Learning Series. And I got to learn the tools of quality improvement whilst doing the project. And it was an amazing opportunity because, it was a very sort of a safe place to learn the tools of quality improvement whilst actually working on this project and to directly implement those to improve the outcomes for our patients. So that was my introduction and led me to get a level three quality improvement certificate. And that has been the start of the rest of the quality improvement work for me.
That's great to hear. And you actually jumped in with both feet because you went straight from audits to advanced level training in QI. So that's a great journey as well. Thank you.
Plus IHI training thrown in. So,
Excellent. Even
yeah.
better. Even better.
What an amazing journey you're outlining here, and the curiosity piece. That's what always we hear that often with physicians who come in and stay with quality improvement. But just moving on here, during your various QI related activities, what did you learn, and how has that changed your practice?
Yeah, that is an interrelated question, two sides to a coin. So the challenges, I'll use the example of the quality improvement project I was part of. The challenges as part of that project were communication could be a problem. So the gap between wanting something and how it lands on a team where, the intent or the message may get lost. So that piece helped me to actually work upon having a clearer idea about my own role as part of the team and how I was going to relay a message so that it landed well, or it landed with the intention that I had. The second was I found it can be quite challenging in teams to the resistance to change, because when we are trying to introduce a new idea or a change, at first is the resistance because people might feel that their work is not enough, or in some way they are being criticized, and that can lead to this resistance towards change. And again, how to circumvent that was a learning. So, using driver diagrams as, guys, this is the problem, this is the solutions we are looking for, and this is how, we envision it will help us. And using that as a PDSA cycle was an amazing tool, very simple to break it down and take it away from a person to actually putting it on a piece of paper as a problem that we could all collectively work towards. And then the third was the challenge that I found was the adherence to processes. So once we set a new process in place, building those systems or bringing changes so that we would continue to do these more frequently was quite a challenge. And as a workaround, I found that having multiple touch points or huddles was again a way to reinforce that change in place. So what I found was challenging was actually a big learning eventually. And so my learning was that the journey on QI is with its ups and downs, but it can be turned around to create learning for everybody involved.
Yes, I really love the way you're aligning the quality improvement and the different tools and methodology, but it's like when you hearken back to communication and it all being threaded through in this in this huge experience. So thank you for that. Over this same period, that you've been involved in quality improvement and a full-time clinician and you've taken an interest in pursuing more physician leadership roles. And what attracted you about these roles?
So just as I was learning about quality improvement, we were also going through the COVID pandemic. And it was therefore not only were we living through a pandemic and the healthcare landscape just changed overnight, it was also an opportunity to see some of our healthcare leaders and how they were conducting themselves through this time and leading the people through this time. So I think that was really exemplary. So it with that sort of as an example, and then with doing a project of my own where I was, you know, facing challenges, it made me more self-reflective. And so I had the opportunity to ask myself a few questions, like, you know, what are the strengths and weaknesses I bring to a team? My values. And the big one was, what are my biases that I bring? And, you know, do I have to take a few steps back and see where I can sort of bring more clarity around those? And again, questions like, you know, am I flexible to change enough to communicate with different people in different ways? Or, you know, how do I foster creativity or empower others in the same team that we work? So those sorts of questions, I think, were my personal catalyst towards wanting to be a better myself, bringing the best forward. So to me, that was quite, that was, I would say, the catalyst to me wanting to change myself and to lead by leading myself at first.
Thank you for that. That's a wonderful insight. And you're right, because the journey to leadership always begins with looking at ourselves and examining ourselves and where we're at. So that is the perfect lead in. And now you have taken on leadership roles, but I just want to ask you, I mean, physicians are actually often reluctant to take on these roles of leadership. And do you have any thoughts as to why that is?
I can answer that because I have felt all of these challenges personally. I think one of the biggest challenges, and I speak from personal experience, but I hope that there may be some truth in it that others can find as well. But one of the challenges was putting myself in the public eye and then taking the feedback and the criticism constructively, but not personally. And so that can be quite hard. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of self-awareness. And so that piece can be quite hard. And also because we are clinicians first, it's hard to differentiate that feedback, criticism from the work we do as a clinician and then the work we do as a leader. And I know that they are not different, but it can sometimes be hard to segregate them. And the second was, and I still do sometimes suffer from it, it's the otherwise term of imposter syndrome. Like, what do I have to offer that, you know, somebody more experienced than me doesn't? And, you know, they are a marathon runner while I'm just learning how to run. And so that can take a lot of work. The other two that I personally found that I had to do some work on was the skill of communication and conflict resolution. And it's never a pleasant place to be in, but it can be rewarding to be a part of something that can be constructively resolved, and there's learning for everybody. So as a leader, when we are expected to do that, it can be quite daunting. And when we don't have those kinds of skills to start, you know, it can be quite nerve-wracking to be in that position. So I think it can be a problem for physicians to have to find themselves in that situation without support. And then the biggest thing is the work-life balance. So where being a clinician takes a big chunk out of a day, how to make time for being a leader. And then whilst doing the two and doing justice to both, you know, how to remain authentic, not burn out, that can be a challenge as well. So it's not that it can't be worked out, but it takes practice. And so I think those would be some of the things that I experienced as I was going into leadership. And I've had to do some work on those. And it's work in progress.
Thank you. Well, you know, I can actually relate to many of those as well. And they're very, very familiar feelings and emotions that I've had as well through my leadership journey. And you're quite right. They are applicable to everyone. And you're right. I think that part of it is you go from this being this expert in the clinical field to being a beginner again in the leadership field. And it is humbling, and it does require a different mindset. So you're very right about that. So going back now and trying to tie the two together, how has your experience in training in quality improvement helped you prepare for physician leadership, do you think?
I think the biggest thing that I have learned from it is that we are all connected. And the systems thinking, once you break it down to seeing the bigger picture, it just becomes more relevant when you see how shortening the time for somebody who's waiting to have a CT scan can have that bigger impact on the working of a hospital. It is very enlightening in how the whole system is interconnected, interdependent, and how making a small change in one area can have a ripple effect on other pieces as well. And so I think for me, that has been one of the biggest learnings, and how even though my role might be quite small in the whole picture, but it is of value in that bigger picture. And then at a granular level, I think it has also, by taking on sort of leadership roles through quality improvement, it has helped me to communicate with people in all different spheres of the hospital working, different teams, and putting myself out there has helped me to be more confident. And so there has been this whole new area of work around patient partner engagement as well. So that has helped me to, dig deeper into, building on my empathy, because they are working at the lab, at the table with us, the patient partners. And so having that empathy, having that collaborative work and seeing it come to light has been very rewarding for me.
Thank you for that. And that does tie in the two sides. They're really this basically the same thing in many ways, aren't they? And they complement one another wonderfully. Okay, I'm going to hand over to Lee to carry on with the next couple of questions, if that's okay.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Gurpreet, you've also taken part in dedicated leadership training, of which QI methodology was just a part. You've made a few references to them today. What did this leadership training look like? And what important lessons did you take from this?
As I was actually very fortunate that I was a part of a 30 plus professional health professional team that went through this leadership program between 2022 to 2024. We just graduated in September this year. And this was a co-leadership training program at UNBC locally, and it was funded through many parties, including Northern Health, the Prince George Medical MSA, I forget what it stands for, SSC, so the Specialist Services Committee through PQI, RCCBC, and the Prince George CME, that pulled their resources, time together to hold this course over a period of 2 years. And it was unique in the way that not only was it local, but there were healthcare professionals from all walks of life, including physicians, nurses, social workers, OTs, physiotherapists. And so there was this milieu of, people that work in the healthcare sector, but come from bring different specialties. It was focused on practice-based leadership development for healthcare leaders. And so it was very practical. And every session was a gem to learn from. And so some of my most memorable ones would be, right at the start was leadership begins with self-awareness. The second one was that I remember and made a real big impact on me was cultural safety and humility, where we had a chance to hear from our local Indigenous leaders and teams. And then another one that I thought was very personally quite useful for me, as I am in my early stages of being a leader, was managing difficult conversations and conflict management. So some tools, and albeit at this point, you know, this was in a safe environment, I think it is still a learning that can come very useful.
Yeah, sounds like a great experience, and to have it almost like a cohort going through and that whole applying, so practicing it, the bedrock of quality improvement is as well, right? Take the theory and apply. So if you were to think, around physician leaderships, and what advice would you give to a physician finding themselves in their first leadership role, either voluntarily or some maybe semi-involuntarily? And so some advice that you would share with them, and as well as what should they do to avoid that deer in the headlights moment? You know, you spoke earlier about, you know, it's a learning process. So, yeah.
Thank you for that question, because I think coming from somebody who's also a newbie at this can be relevant. But I think as I have started on this journey, I think the two pieces of advice that I have got have been two mythbusters. So the first mythbuster is leaders are born. And I do think that some people can have a natural predisposition towards being a leader. However, a vast majority of us, and you out there listening included, can be trained to become a leader. And that involves a lot of self-work, but a lot of it, you know, if you reach out and get coaching, if you reach out and find some mentors to work with, if you are committed to continuous learning, then you can be that next leader that makes a big impact on people around you and on the systems that you work in. And so I think that's the first message that I do believe is true, is that leaders are made. So the second thing, again, a myth, is that as a leader, you're alone. Again, I think it comes back to believing that you can build a team around yourself to fall back on for advice, for having a soundboard to, you know, sort of hear out loud the ideas that you may have, but also true critics and true people who can give you good feedback, so that there is a chance for self-improvement, because that's all it is about, is continuous self-improvement and, you know, learning. And if you have to reach out for coaching, for therapy, there's so many resources out there. In fact, the Doctors of BC has a resource for coaching peers in quality improvement and as leaders. So, you know, there are such great resources out there. You do not have to do it alone. And so even if it is a very daunting idea at first, you're not alone. You do not have to feel alone, and you do not have to be alone. So reach out for help and, you know, from trusted people so that you can do the job as well as you can.
Brilliant.
Thank you for that wisdom. Yeah, that's wonderful, isn't it? I agree with you completely. It's very often tempting to look at experienced and senior leaders and think, wow, they're so good. They're so eloquent. They're so decisive. They're such great team players. And yet you forget that they've been doing this for a long time and they've gained from experience. And of course they were once in that new position as well. And they probably weren't as confident and as experienced, and they probably made all their mistakes early on and learned from them. And that's how we learn, right? So thank you for that insight. Now, I think you mentioned this a bit earlier about the risks of taking on leadership, but physician leaders, I think because they often do this on top of their clinical duties, I think they're particularly vulnerable to finding themselves in a position where they can get overwhelmed and maybe even burning out. Do you have any personal strategies that you use to prevent burning out and finding yourself in that situation?
I think, that's a really relevant question, no matter what you do. I'm very early on in my career in leadership, but I have been a practicing physician for a while. So I think it's relevant in both, and it could be relevant to many other careers. So for me particularly, overwhelm and burnout are a state of mind, and how burnt out and overwhelmed I feel is directly opposite to how grounded I am at any given time. So, to increase my groundedness and my peace of mind, I do have some strategies that I work on regularly. For example, exercise, yoga, journaling, those sorts of things really help me sort of ground it. I have started to meditate more frequently because it really, helps with that sort of quietening the mind. For me personally, family is really big. It fills my cup. So I love to go for walks with them. I cook for myself and my family a lot because, nutrition is a big part of it. And my two dogs, the joy of my life. So I make sure that I get enough walks with them and we play catch in the backyard. So to keep me sane. And then, I think the other thing is also learning to say no, knowing my own limitations without feeling pressurized into overcommitting myself. That's a big piece. But again, all of this and time management, these are the sorts of things that I'm still working on, and I'm far from perfect. And so, but it's work in progress.
Yes, absolutely. And family balance is key, but it's often one of the most elusive things, right, to get a handle on. So you're quite right. And it sounds like you're doing a pretty good job. So yeah, well done. The other thing I'd like to ask you is, looking back on your QI experience and your early leadership roles now, and your QI your leadership training, what have you found most personally rewarding so far? What keeps you motivated, and are there any aspects of that that help you get motivated, get up in the morning, and turn up to work, basically?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is a constant reminder that what I do has value and adds value. And, so to do my job better, am I better today than I was yesterday? So, am I doing things better today than I was doing yesterday? And it's a constant improvement. As a kid, I was an idealist. I wanted to be a physician to really make positive change. And some of those ideas are still true for me. Luckily, they haven't been tainted by the test of time. And so, am I doing things that actually add value to other people's lives in a positive way? Am I, when I go to work, do I find I've made it a personal agenda to actually find a fun fact about a coworker every time I'm at work, every day I'm at work, so that I get to know them better as a person, because there's more to them than just being a physician or a nurse or a social worker with me. So am I doing something every day that makes me better today than I was yesterday? Or am I, lifting heavier weights in the gym? So anything that is a constant improvement over my version from yesterday is what brings me to work every day and to get up in the morning and say, hey, thank you for another good day.
That's great. That's a great answer. And you know what? Continuous improvement. It works with every aspect of life, right? It's almost a mantra you could live by. So that's a great answer. Thank you. Well, but we've reached the end of our interview now, and I can hear the closing music, which means it's time to wrap things up. But I'd just like to send a personal thank you to you, Dr. Gurpreet Narang, for coming on the show today, as one of our QualityCast North coffee mugs will be heading your way shortly. But listeners will be pleased to know that Kapit will be back later in the series for a special episode. We'll more about that in the future, but listeners should look out for that. But for now, it's goodbye from us here at Quality Cast North. I'm Sher Chiri.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
And you've been listening to Quality Cast North.
If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycons@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Sher Chiri and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chiri. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.